WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. My guest David Byrne first became known as the co-founder, lead singer, and primary songwriter of Talking Heads, a band that started out as part of the New York new wave scene of the 70s. They later expanded their sound with African and funk influences, and Byrne went off to do his own projects. He worked with producer Brian Eno, composed music for the Twyla Tharp Dance Company, and directed the film True Stories. Eventually, Talking Heads broke up, and Byrne became infatuated with Latin music. He started his own record label, in which he's released anthologies of contemporary South and Central American music, as well as his own Latin-inspired music. But his latest album, Uh-Oh, returns to the style he developed with Talking Heads. Before we meet him, let's hear Girls on My Mind from his new album, Uh-Oh. David Byrne, welcome to Fresh Air.
Thank you. Thanks.
Your latest record, Uh-Oh, in a way returns to your Talking Heads style of songwriting and of singing. And I'm wondering, like, what prompted that return?
I think it was unconscious. I don't think it was intentional. I think with this separation of the band, in retrospect, it seems that I had to kind of make a clean break and wipe the slate clean and not, for a while, not do anything that in any way had any similarity to what I'd done with Talking Heads. Although it was natural for me to do music that sounded a little bit like that, I think unconsciously I just stayed away from it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, when Talking Heads started, I thought of your music then as being very pared down instrumentally, vocally, even visually, and that the band would, like, wear T-shirts on stage. And I'm wondering how much impact the music of other cultures had on you in your sense of stage presence, you know, theatrical presence, both in, like, in the way that you dress and even in the sense of, like, arrangements and how big they should be. And what the difference is, finally, to you between slick and show busy and just, like, good theatrical?
It seems to me that when a lot of people start out, whether it's a choreographer, a musician, or theater, or whatever, that you often start out by throwing out everything from the past, and you pare things down to just the essentials, to what you feel comfortable with. And gradually, it seems that you can, there's more and more that you feel comfortable with, that you understand about performing and about the stage and musical ideas. And so you can kind of include more and more elements in what you do. I think for me, when Talking Heads first started touring, after a few years of touring, I saw lots of different kinds of theatrical practice, whether it was music shows or kabuki theater or whatever. And eventually I came to accept that it seems really obvious, but I came to accept that the stage is a really artificial place to be. No matter how much I might kind of strip down and kind of want to show my real self or just be an ordinary guy or whatever, it's impossible because the stage is not a place where anybody can be ordinary, or the idea of having realism on a stage is kind of bogus, because as soon as you put something on stage, it's not real anymore. It's It's about artifice. And so I kind of, at some point, accepted that that artifice is part of what goes on stage, whether it's music or theater or whatever. And it just depends on how you want to use it.
You've been criticized by some people for your explorations into the musics of other cultures, criticized for being something of a dilettante and for not, you know, because you haven't studied these musics all your life, so when you go in, you don't completely understand the culture and the history and so on. How do you react to those criticisms?
I would say that some of the best music in the world is made by people who hear something and they don't know exactly what it is and they don't know exactly where it comes from, and they kind of incorporate it into what they do. And that includes Africans who incorporate a lot of rock and roll and Cuban music and R&B, and Americans who incorporated a lot of African music over the years. You can kind of go all over the world and find any kind of, just about any kind of music, and somewhere in there there's an example of it absorbing other traditions into it. It just seems like that's the way music evolves.
Let me play something from your recent album, Re Momo, and I thought we'd hear Independence Day. Would you like to say something about the song?
What could I say about it? The rhythm is a cumbia, which is popular in Colombia and a lot of Mexico. They play it slightly different in Mexico. There's even a version of a cumbia played in Texas in the southwest of the U.S., which is also quite different, but I'm sure there's a connection somewhere.
Okay, well, let's hear Independence Day from David Byrne's album, Re Momo.
Now and then, I get horny. At night you do. At night you do. Smile from side to side. At night you do. At night you do. She'll be coming round the mountain. Six white horses by her side. No stops for gas, food or lodging. She's wearing nothing but a smile. Though we struggle for our freedom, our need for others still remains. We know what will make us happy.
That's David Byrne from his album, Re Momo. He'll be back with us after this short break. This is Fresh Air. David Byrne is my guest. You were born in Scotland and moved to the States, I believe, when you were in second grade. Why did your family decide to move here?
It was work. The shipyards were all closing down in Scotland. And in other areas, there was very, very little work. So the American companies, in this case Westinghouse, were offering trained people in Europe. I think it was they'd pay for the passage of that person and their family if they promised to work for them for a number of years. It's kind of like indentured servants. It was also known as, I guess, the brain drain, because they were getting a lot of trained people out of Europe to run and not run, but work in American factories. This was in the 50s.
So your father was an engineer with the company?
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
And when you moved here, did you have an accent? Were you self-conscious about being from a different country?
Yeah, I think I must have been, because I would have been in elementary school, and very shortly I lost my accent because the other kids couldn't understand me. And I probably did it to fit in. So, I mean, at that age, it's real important to fit in.
Yeah, so you didn't like being different then?
Nuh-uh. I wanted to be like everybody else.
A big change from who you became, right? So why did you first take up music?
Everybody was doing it then.
Yeah, everybody had a guitar.
Yeah, everybody had a guitar or drums or something. Everybody was being in a band. So I thought, I'll do that.
Did you teach yourself?
Yeah, you know, got, you know, those instruction books.
The method books?
Yeah, the method books.
Which one did you have?
It was called Mel Bay.
Mel Bay, okay.
Yeah.
what were the songs in that book?
Oh, you know, I don't remember.
Let me play something from the first Talking Heads album, Talking Heads 77. And I really love this record, and I think every time I play it, it really holds up. There's nothing that sounds dated about it. I thought I would play Baby, It's You, or Who Is It? It's called.
That's a short one, yeah.
Yeah, well, I tell you, you know, I think of Talking Heads in the early days as having had a really pared-down style, and I think this song really...
It sure is pared down,
yeah. It's really catchy. I really love this song. It's almost kind of like the semiotics of rock lyrics, too, you know?
Uh-huh.
Just like, Baby, It's You.
Yep, that's about it, too.
Yeah. Do you want to say anything about writing this?
Yeah, that's kind of what it was. I thought, well, I'll pare a song down to really just... just bare essentials, kind of no verse, no chorus, just with three words or whatever, and there you go.
Let's hear it. Who is it?
What is it? Oh, baby, it's you. I remembered something else about when I started writing songs that ended up being a lot of them being Talking Heads songs.
Uh-huh.
Is that I had a feeling about the lyrics of rock and roll songs. I had a feeling that there was this kind of ongoing tradition of kind of stylized lyrics, whether it was, meant people pretending they were black and from the South or whatever. There was this whole kind of genre or style of writing lyrics for rock and roll songs. And I just thought, I'm going to throw all that out and try and write in a just real straightforward style and use language that is not song language, that's more either kind of, it's more like written language or spoken language, but it's not the kind of accepted song language. I thought, I'm going to see if that works. I think some of it worked, some of it didn't, but I think some of it worked.
Why did Talking Heads eventually split apart?
I think, well, I'm not sure. I think the seeds of a kind of the disillusion of a band are kind of planted the minute a band begins to have some success. It's as if that the thing that makes it grow and succeed is also the thing that's going to eventually kill it. And I think that's the as you succeed, as we kind of survived anyway, we found that we each needed our own space, we each developed our own friends, and part of that was just out of necessity. We'd been hanging around each other so much that if we kept hanging in such close quarters, we would have been killing one another. So out of necessity, we gradually kind of drifted apart a little bit. And so for a number of years, I guess, we kind of maintained a balance of keeping our own lives separate from the band and then coming together and making music.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually, I guess it just gets to be more than, at least from my point of view, more than makes sense. It becomes more like a business than it started out being. So that eventually just you drift apart further and further until it gets to a point where you start wondering Why are we working together? Who are these people? I hardly know this person anymore. That kind of thing, which is, it's sad, but it seems like it's natural, too.
Do you think you'd ever work together again?
It's possible, but we certainly don't have any plans to.
You know what you said about how often what's most responsible for a band's success is also what kills it. Do you worry about that yourself as a solo performer, that the things that bring you success are also the things that can stunt your growth?
Oh, exactly, yeah. I mean, too much success in one thing, you're all of a sudden you're trapped. All of a sudden it's like, that's what you're known for, that's, people are going to expect you to do that again, or if you don't do it again, it's going to be, they're going to be disappointed, and all that kind of stuff, yeah.
So how have you tried to work around that?
Tried and, to avoid success, yeah. I don't know. Just being aware of it, I guess, is enough.
Okay. Well, David Byrne, thank you a lot for talking with us.
Okay.
David Byrne's latest album is Uh-Oh. This is Fresh Air.